Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
The Fredericksburg Area Museum is in this morning, and it's going to be part Fredericksburg Area Museum and Virginia 250 and all kinds of things going on. Kylie Thompson, the curator of collections, is here. Kylie, it's good to have you back. Good morning.
Thanks for having me back. I always have such a great time here.
We always cover such interesting topics, so that's why you're such an interesting guest. So it's good to have you back. And it's good to have you back to talk about Witness to Revolution, because that is about to open at the museum.
It is. That is our newest exhibit. It's going to be opening up on the third floor in Council Chambers. And Witness to a Revolution is our America 250 exhibit. So we are going to explore everything from Fredericksburg in the Revolution in those early days to the bicentennial celebrations of Fredericksburg. We even talk about the Civil War in there, all the way up to today and how those ideals are playing into our community and everyday lives. So you are going to see a lot of stuff in there.
Well, and we'll get into all of what we're going to see and get into that as we go along this morning. But that is so interesting that, and I've noticed that with some of these exhibits, it's not just the colonial time, that a lot of this Virginia 250 does seem to just be stretching out to tie into today and how it all matters.
Oh, yeah. I think it's very easy to forget that history happens every day. And these big events, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, all these, the work the Founding Fathers did, it's still in effect today. You know, we have the government and all that. So we are still seeing the effects of what happened then. And it's really interesting to compare how things were to how things are now and look at what's being mirrored and what's not.
So, Kylie, how does one put together an exhibit? When they said to you, Kylie, we want you to put together Witness to Revolution, 250 years to history, that's a lot of ground to cover.
It is. So it starts with a lot of, okay, and staring at a blank wall.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out how it's going to go. So we always start big picture. And I'm co-curating this with Clarissa Sanders. So she also has a very extensive history background, and she's done a lot of these celebrations before. So her and I sat down, and we went, big picture, what do we want to talk about? Mm-hmm. And we kind of split it down the middle. So I got all the Revolutionary War stuff, and she took the Civil War, the Bicentennial, and then we kind of came together for today. And it's hard when you have an exhibit because there's so much history.
Right.
I could turn the entire museum into just the Revolutionary War and still have things to talk about. So how do you squeeze it into that tiny space? And we do that through, let's give the visitor exactly what they need to know and give them room to ask questions, to come to programs, to follow up, and we give them resources and all of that. So we try to make the most of the space that we have.
I would think that most times when I come to an exhibit at the museum and I see things, then I go and I start Googling or start going and looking in for specific stories. I guess for you as a curator and someone putting this together, that's a win.
When
people start, you know, going beyond the exhibit.
Oh, absolutely, because that means I've done my job. You are now aware of what has happened. And one of my favorite things is when I'm talking to people and they go, I don't really like history. Give me 10 minutes. We will make you like history. So that's the other fun thing about exhibits too, is finding ways to be engaging. So I could just throw dates and names at you, but I don't retain information like that. I want to hear that crazy story how at the Rappahannock Forge, they were worried about the British coming to destroy the forge. So they made him pack up everything and leave. So there's all these mini stories in there that it's like, let's throw those into the exhibit.
See that, so I'm guessing that's something that really happened. I've never heard that.
Mm-hmm. That really happened. So James Hunter's ironworks was located on the Rappahannock, and there are letters from Thomas Jefferson corresponding with him. He is delivering swords and guns and kettles and all this stuff. And so when they're worried if the British are going to go to Yorktown or are they going to go to Fredericksburg, mm-hmm. because there are not one but two forges here making weapons. And so they stationed militia here. They told James Hunter to pack up and leave. And it ended up being all right, but they still had to worry, is Fredericksburg going to end up on the map as one of these battle sites?
Boy, to be able to tie a lot of that together and tell these stories, I guess at the end of the day also, people will walk out of the museum and realize the role Fredericksburg did play, the big role it played.
Oh, absolutely. We have all kinds of generals. We, of course, have Washington. We have the arms manufactury, which I don't have favorites when it comes to objects. It sounds like I do, but I love them all. With that being said, this is one of my favorites. So we have a Rappahannock Forge musket and a Fredericksburg Gunnery musket. So they're the big, like brown vests, and both of those will be on exhibit. And the gunnery one says Fredericksburg 1776 on it. So
how about that?
These guns are so rare. There are only a handful of them known out there. So everyone should come check them out. They're beautiful. They have this incredible story, and we're so lucky to have them.
We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk more, especially about, you know, especially your as a curator and just getting stuff together for this. Had to be really exciting.
Oh, it's so much fun.
To do that, too. So we'll do that when we come back. Kylie Thompson here with the Fredericksburg Area Museum, famva.org, famva.org. The Witness to Revolution, 250 Years of History. It opens on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It opens this Friday. And so we'll talk about that this morning as we go along on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can access all episodes of Town Talk online at newstalk1230.net or on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Kylie Thompson here this morning from the Fredericksburg Area Museum. Witness to Revolution, 250 years of history. Fredericksburg's role in the revolution is about to open on Friday, the 3rd. And Kylie is here to talk about it. So I guess one of the fun things, as you talked about, you know, kind of narrowing it down, then is looking at what you have as far as the collection or things you could get.
Oh yeah, that's always my favorite part, and it's tough with the revolution because there's not a lot of artifacts out there. They're hard to come by. They haven't survived. So we kind of have to make do with what we have. Like I said, we're fortunate. We have the weapons. We have a letter from General Whedon from Fredericksburg, mm-hmm. to the Marquis de Lafayette, and he's writing about protecting the forge.
Yeah.
So we're very fortunate to have those. But then kind of as we move through the years, it's fun to see what else pops up. So we have a dress that during the bicentennial, a woman named Delphia, she was going to go to a ball at the Sheraton, and she needed a dress. And so what she did is she went and took down her curtains and fashioned a colonial-looking dress out of her curtains.
Really?
And they are 1776-themed curtains. It is so cool. It is going to be out. But it's stuff like that we gather from the community. We're borrowing a beautiful bust from the Masonic Lodge that was given to them during the bicentennial. And we had a lot of community support with finding artifacts as well, mm-hmm. because even though we have over 4,000, we don't have everything.
Yeah. Wow. And so and again, that's where just having relationships with the community or you know, the community, being able to get things like that will make this really fascinating.
Yeah, and it's a really neat thing to do, too, because we've done exhibits in the past where we've talked about the revolution, so it's fun to get new artifacts in. So for those who came to the museum 10 years ago, you may see certain ones again, but you're also going to see something new. And it's also a way, everyone has a super interesting collection, so why don't we all collaborate in order to share those collections?
Well, one of the things, and you and I have done things on this in the past, I know that always interests you is dresses. And what's so interesting, whether it's Revolutionary War or even the Civil War, to see colors.
Yes.
To see actual colors and not, you know, some photo that's been, you know, that AI has doctored or something, which it's fun to see that. But to actually see, because I think it was that a Civil War dress one time you showed me?
Yeah, that was a Civil War dress. And I think you're thinking of... You saw a few. Are you thinking of the brown and blue one?
The brown and blue
one. With the big, bold stripes?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And I think we might have talked about it a little last time, too. And what it is, it's this bodice, and it is, think, royal blue and this beautiful brown color, and there are these big, thick, vertical stripes. It's a statement, which you would never imagine people wearing that.
Right.
But, you know, she walked around town and turned heads. That's...
Right.
She did what she set out to do.
And to see those kinds of things, to see dresses and to see things within their actual color, even though it may have faded some, but still you're seeing color from that time that we don't see in the revolutionary time. We don't have pictures.
No, and it's so easy to just think the world was in black and white when it wasn't. And there's other dresses we have that are, you know, these beautiful burgundy colors or bright teal. And people have always loved expressing themselves through color, especially when we started to figure out how to use dyes and get all these different pigments. And part of our exhibit, we have a tavern space, like it's an interactive tavern space. And the walls are green because that's, you would... probably think wood paneling for a tavern.
We never think that.
Yeah, the walls are green or they're pink. Or if you go into the rising sun, they have green trim and such.
Yeah.
So color was prevalent.
So I guess with exhibit making 101, I guess you learn about how there's got to be some sort of, you don't want to overwhelm someone with stuff, but you still want to have, like you say, you want to have some things that are going to, some panels or even some artifacts that people are going to stand by and you know, be interested in.
Yeah, it's a tough challenge to find that balance.
And based on space, too.
Oh, absolutely, especially council chamber, because you have to stick to the exterior walls there. There's no middle wall. And so we can do that through the use of the panels that you read, putting pictures of objects on those when we may not have enough case space. Because you also figure you could fill a case, but you have to have room to tell people what's in there.
Yeah.
So we will be tweaking it up until the day before, because you can know exactly what you want in a case. And then you go to do it and you say, that's not quite right. The story isn't quite right here. Let's swap this out. Let's change this around a little bit. And that's when we call in like Teresa from our education department to come in and say, let's make a space more interactive. How do we tell the story to families and children and all of that? So it's a big collaborative effort.
That's the thing that we sometimes walk around these exhibits and say, oh, that was nice, not realizing that like that. What, do we want to make it interactive? Or is there enough information here? Is there too many words here? All of that takes time. It's hard when you're told, here's a space and you've got this amount of space to describe something. It can be really difficult.
It's so difficult. And even if you just look at a label, one of those small 5x7s by an artifact, it's only a couple sentences.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I could talk about that one thing for 45 minutes. So
We've done that.
Yeah. How do you get everything you want them to know in one little label, which it's there's a whole science, there's books on it, all of this stuff. So it's a lot of talking things through, having other staff members and community members walk through and say, this doesn't make sense. Or even just saying, what do you think of this? And if they ask a question, you say, okay, I know there's a hole here that we need to fill. So yeah, there's a lot of back and forth with planning.
So from start to finish, how long would an exhibit like this has to be... you know, months and months in the making.
Yeah, yeah. And so I started about a year ago with research, and I was researching up until I finished the last panel, because you're always finding something new, or you wake up in the middle of the night, you're like, wait, I didn't check out this person's diary. What if there's something?
Yeah.
Because then you just kind of fall down the rabbit holes where it's, oh, this was super interesting. Let me dive more into this, and especially when you start reading those old newspapers and people's letters, you could spend years and years and years and still not be done.
Well, I'm sure this has engulfed you.
Yeah.
I mean, and even though you sound like, and I know you love this, you love history and to be able to be putting this together, but it is time consuming.
It really is. And sometimes there were some weeks where I said, I cannot talk about the revolution this week. Right. I need to go talk about another time period. Yeah. I need to do something different, especially too when you're reading a lot of stories of people being injured or the enslaved population where it's hard and it's sad. Mm-hmm. And you just have to take a step back and say, okay, this is a lot to take on. Let's revisit this after I take a little break here.
Well, and you, with someone who has access and knows how to find all the resources and things that you have with the museum and the art, you know, just everything that's, you know, you've archived and everything, just being able to just kind of get your head around what do we want to use and what makes the cut and what doesn't.
Yeah, that's always a tough one for me. I've spent hours in archives and finding letters where I'll have ones that are personal favorites for me,
right?
But I can't use them.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that.
And so it's a mix of, okay, what can I then use in a program? So I'm going to do a What Remains, a 250 version. So maybe I can use those letters there. But again, it said my kind of thought process is, if you came in knowing absolutely nothing, what do I need to tell you to make sure that you're not confused and you at least have a general understanding of what's going on, so then you can ask questions.
Well, what's great, would be great, Callie, about Witness to Revolution, 250 years of history, and focusing on Fredericksburg, that people can, again, start out at the museum and go through this exhibit and then branch off and go to some of the other places in town that might fit in or they might have an interest in.
Oh, for sure. 250, I mean, it's nationwide. It's everywhere you go, you're going to see some 250 stuff going on. And what's really neat is the Virginia 250 Commission has these little passports, and you can pick them up at the Visitor Center on 95, and there are all these different historic sites, and so many of them are in Fredericksburg. So you go to the site, you get your little mm-hmm. stamp, and you can go check out the next one. So we always recommend, you know, come start with us, get that general history, but then go to the Mary Washington House, go to Kenmore, go to the Rising Sun Tavern and Stratford Hall and all these sites, and then start building the story, because we're all going to be telling something a little different.
Right.
And that's what we try to do too. I know Kenmore, Ferry Farm, Mary Washington House, I know what stories that they've got covered. And so they are the professionals at that. So let me see what else I can tell to help make sure that we're working together to tell a bigger story.
That's the great thing about this, that you can do that and really tell just a complete story.
Yeah, and there is so much to tell. I keep saying that about Fredericksburg, because some people think, like, because a battle didn't happen here, nothing really happened.
Yeah.
But from the very beginning, men were sitting in taverns being upset about what's happening in Boston and saying, I'm ready to do something.
Huh.
So, and those men formed militias. They were ready to march on Williamsburg. They were ready to do all these things. And we just don't really talk about it that much.
Well, this is going to be really a good intro.
Yes, I hope so. That's the goal.
To everything. So it opens on Friday, the upper floor. Is it the third floor?
Yep, the third floor. And the opening is from 6 to 8 p.m. So we'll have some drinks, some snacks. You can come see the artifacts, talk history. It'll be a good time.
6 to 8 Friday at the Fredericksburg Area Museum. And this really is exciting, just because we're starting to see the Virginia 250. And like you said, those passports, I got one. I mean, it's like a great thing to be able to go around and
it's
get
so
a passport. It's the kind of thing you want to hold on to then, even
yeah.
after this year, to show this is, it's just like things, people that were around and doing things during the bicentennial have all kind talk about the bicentennial. I think at the end of this year, we're going to hear a lot of those kind of same
stories.
Oh, yes.
So when just everyone is out doing their 250 celebration, save some of that stuff, because a curator is going to contact you in 50 years and say, hey, I want to talk to you, about the semi-quincentennial. What do you have for this case that I have? And there's at least three people out there who, that's the conversation we had verbatim. So
yeah. So this is really, for the museum, it's got to be exciting, because this is, and I know you're involved with as we go along through the year, we're going to be involved in a bunch of programs.
Oh, yeah. And the programs are community-wide, too. On the 4th of July, all of these sites, we're doing a big 4th of July celebration. We're going to have different types of programming. Clarissa does a wonderful Revolutionary Women walking tour. There's going to be one more, actually two more, the last Saturday of April and July. And she tells the stories of women who just have kind of either been lost to history or who have these incredible stories that often get overshadowed by a lot of other things.
So with Friday coming up, I'm sure that you're a bit frazzled right now as you start getting this all together.
Yeah, and we're pretty much done, but there's still that stress because now, you know, something is like a millimeter off. No one's going to notice, but I'm going to notice. So it's just getting those final touches on. And with exhibits, I've never done one where you weren't kind of working up to the last minute, not
right.
because you're not prepared, just because there's so much work and we're a small staff. And but it will. I hope it'll be worth it. It'll all be a lot of fun. But yeah,
I have seen you putting exhibits together, and it is so interesting because I can remember the one exhibit I can remember you, as you put it together, I remember taking pictures of you doing it. And then when I saw the exhibit later in the week when it opened, it was totally different.
Yeah.
And it's those kinds of things, I guess, that once it's there and you, like you say, you walk around and you look at it and you just think, that's not exactly what we want.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was like Living Legacies, because you were trying to talk to Gayla and I was on a ladder with a drill or something like that.
It was it was Kylie, as I had not seen you before.
Yeah, you learned to do it all, really. But yeah, it's like an HGTV show where it just changes overnight.
Yeah.
And because right now, what it does is it'll kind of plateau and you're like, oh, I'm so far from being done. But then you put the dress in, you put the portraits on the wall, you put the guns in, and then you're like, okay. But then the second those information panels get on the wall and then you see the color and the definition and all of that, it's so fun and it feels so good to watch it come to life. So if you were to walk up there now, you'd be like, okay, but
Friday?
Yeah, but the panels are going on the wall today and that doesn't take very long, so it'll be good.
Wins to Revolution, 250 years of history, Fredericksburg's role in the Revolution, 6 to 8 Friday. It opens up at the Fredericksburg Area Museum downtown. And I guess if people want to get involved financially still and help out the cause, they can.
Yeah, so we do. If you go to our website, you can learn about some of our sponsorships. Honestly, any type of donations help, even if it's just $10. But you could donate to be a sponsor where you get discounted tickets, behind-the-scenes tours, all kinds of different things. So you can read about those packages. But again, any little bit helps, and we're so appreciative of it.
FAMVA.org, the website for the Fredericksburg Area Museum. Social media is great, too. Facebook they do a lot of updates you'll see there. But the website is FAMVA.org. Kylie Thompson from the museum here this morning. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:31.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Kylie Thompson from the Fredericksburg Area Museum is here this morning. FAMVA.org is the website. Again, Witness to Revolution, 250 years of history, will open this Friday, 6 to 8, at the museum. Fredericksburg's role in the revolution. I can't wait to see it, just because having been around here, and just because, like you said, you don't have to, and you don't want to just kind of repeat some of the things that are already in town. So this will all be, you know, a lot of new stuff.
Oh yeah, and like I said, there's the little annex of that room. We're going to turn into an interactive tavern because that's really where the revolution began in Fredericksburg. So you'll be able to sit down and play tavern games and hear the sounds. And we've worked with the UMW Theater Department to come in, and they basically dressed the room there, so it looks like a completely different room. Now, there is an elevator and a bunch of outlets in there, so it kind of takes you out of it a little bit. We did our best to hide that.
Oh, good. Yeah, I never thought of that. It's with certain things.
It's our colonial elevators, we call it.
Yeah, it's a colonial. Right, I like that. And you mentioned it. One other revolutionary note to mention, and you mentioned just a second ago about there's a walking tour on the 25th. Mm-hmm. Women of Fredericksburg, walking tour. So there's also another option to get involved.
Absolutely. And you can check out those tickets online. They go fast. Clarissa actually just did the first one this past Saturday, and I believe it was a hit. I sat and listened to her stories, and I'm not going to repeat them because I don't want to give any spoilers.
Right.
But they are so interesting, and she takes you to places that you wouldn't imagine that you would be going on a walking tour about women, and there's people you've never heard of, and she tries to highlight those stories. So you're learning, you're meeting someone new whenever you go. So yeah. I definitely recommend checking that out.
So switching gears a little bit, on the 11th, on April the 11th, all I know about this is it is about a tombstone.
Yes. Okay. Here's the story.
And I knew that there had to be a story.
There is definitely a story here. So in the collection is this big tombstone. And for those who have been to the museum, you've seen it. You've either seen it on the second floor during the These Old Walls exhibit, or it was in the right in the window of my office. And
oh, I know it. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm, it's the tombstone of Elizabeth Spooner, and she died in 1803. She was 27 years old, and she had seven sons that she had left behind six when I passed, but she had seven sons in her life.
Okay.
And this tombstone came to the museum years and years ago, and it was broken. It was found on a farm, just kind of falling apart, and the family said, "We can't find where this goes. We don't know what to do with it. Let's give it to the museum. If you ever find where her body is, please return it." So it just sat there, and for years people have tried to figure this out. And for my entire time there, she has just absolutely intrigued me. And so we found out, and when I say we, it's a ton of people have helped me research this. Is her father is Lieutenant Colonel Gustavus Wallace, and he's buried in the Masonic Cemetery, and her son, Henry, is in there as well. So we said, wait a minute. We know her body's not in there because this thing was found in, like, Spotsylvania.
Okay.
So there's a mystery there in and of itself. But we said, what if we put it back somewhere someday, because it's not fair to her to be in the museum. You know, we can tell her story and all that, but she deserves to be with her family. So after collaborating with the Masonic Lodge, they said, you can put her here with her father. So I went through the process of having it deaccessioned, which museums don't get rid of stuff a lot, but sometimes we have to, or sometimes we do, and it's a whole process. And so the committee agreed to do this, and so we did all the research in the cemetery to make sure the spot was clear and all of that. And so I actually have the top half of it in my car. It's been in my backyard seasoning, so then it won't break when it gets reattached.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I just look out my kitchen window, and there's a half of a tombstone. So the bottom is in, and we're going to attach the top today, but she's getting her final resting place. So on the 11th, we're holding a ceremony, almost giving her like a funeral she never got. St. George will be joining us because their family were parishioners there. We're going to have all kinds of people. The Masonic Lodge, I've been working with Mike Dove, the past master there, to make sure that this comes to life for her. And afterwards, for those who want to join us, you can come over to the lodge for a tour and some light refreshments. So it's a chance to get some extra history in there. But Elizabeth Spooner has almost become a personal friend because you spend so much time researching them. And we still don't know a ton about her, but we do know that her father never married, and we don't know who her mother is. So there's still these mysteries to solve, but she gets to finally rest and be at peace.
That is so interesting on a couple of levels, because it kind of reminds me of James Monroe's daughter.
Exactly.
And that whole thing, and those people, all the ones that were involved in it talked about how, you know, they felt like they knew her at the end.
Oh, absolutely. It's a very, very real thing. And you are sad for them. You're happy for them. You're all these things. And you just, especially her being a woman during that period, they are so easily forgotten. All you can find of her in the papers is she gets married. But she's so much more. She's so much more than a mother or someone's daughter. She had a favorite color and a favorite food and all of that. And if we can just make sure her name doesn't get forgotten and she's not just relegated to a tombstone in a museum, then I think we've done our part.
Right. I mean, in that case, that was like bringing Eliza home. This is bringing Elizabeth home.
Yeah, exactly. And that actually, watching all that unfold was really inspiring because it was like, okay, we can do this. We can make this happen somehow. So like I said, her body isn't there, but at least she'll be with her family again.
Yeah, yeah. Just to do all of that with the tombstone, and like you say, what an interesting idea, and what a special thing.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about collections too, is you have to make decisions like that where it's cool, it's beautiful, it's made of sandstone, all this stuff, but does it really belong here? You know, is there a place that it could better be served? And even though it won't be in the museum anymore, we still get to tell the story. She's still part of the history books, even in 2026, that future historians will now know that she won't be forgotten.
Yeah, and the whole Spotsylvania angle of why was the family in the Masonic Cemetery and she's in Spotsylvania?
And that's the thing. So her father dies like 6 months before she does, and he leaves her everything. And it's also really sad because she never gets to see that.
Yeah.
So I kind of have a theory that it had to do with her father had a ton of land and her husband put her on some of that land, but some of the boundaries are a little wonky now. But either way, she's most likely under a building somewhere, her original burial place or something of that nature. Yeah. 'Cause the family did do extensive research to try to find this out.
Now, you used a word a few minutes ago about de-something.
Oh, deaccession.
What did we learn today? What a great word.
The word of the day is deaccession. So in museums, there's accessioning and deaccessioning. So when you bring me an artifact and it gets added to the collection, I'm going to accession it. So I'm going to catalog it, make it part of our permanent collection. But every once in a while, we deaccession stuff. So it comes out of the permanent catalog, and it is either moved to another institution, it's disposed of, occasionally it's sold. There's all these different options. This is it's not a straightforward process. And I know people, it's a scary word because you think once something goes in the museum, it's forever. Now, I'm going to just say for everyone listening, I'm not just throwing out stuff.
Right.
That is not how this works. I'm doing a full inventory this year. So, for example, we had this big wooden beam, and there's something called provenance, and that's its kind of relation to the mission and the collecting goals.
Right.
Now, this beam did not have provenance where we could interpret it or really use it. So I looked at it and said, where could this go? That's better. It went to the UMW Historic Preservation Department, and they looked at it right away and said, this is an amazing teaching tool. So we had that deaccessioned. The same thing with this tombstone. I bring it in front of a committee.
I was just going to say, I'm sure that there's a committee.
Yeah,
that
I can't just say we're getting rid of it. So there is so much paperwork involved. So even if it's something as little as like a broken frame, tons of paperwork, has to go in front of the committee. I basically go and I state my case, and this is why I think, and they discuss it. And then once they approve it, it goes in front of the board for final approval. So there are multiple steps to make sure that stuff is protected.
Yeah.
And if for some reason something were to be deaccessioned that maybe belongs to a family, you know, I make sure to reach out to the family and do my due diligence before just moving stuff along. So it's scary on the surface, but sometimes it's necessary, especially if we had a print of a bunch of Civil War generals in the collection, but it was from Richmond, and it was all about Richmond history. It's like, well, that doesn't fit Fredericksburg, so let me rehome this, find something better. We have some a ledger from Smith County. It doesn't help us with the Fredericksburg story, but I know Smith County would absolutely love to have it. So it's finding the right home for things is really what it is at the end of the day.
Well, and like you said, I think you mentioned earlier, sometimes you have to do this because you don't have room for...
Oh, you've seen my office. Yeah.
I have. There's so much there. And the filing system you have is just amazing of how... When we've done things, you're able to just—it's a terrific filing system that you just certain keywords, it will pop up. But you can't have everything, and like you say, certain things just have to be moved on at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because we are an actively collecting institution, and I'm actually getting new stuff in this week, and I want to be able to continue collecting because history is still happening, and especially, too, as we look at the collection, over time, silences happen on accident. So we may have a ton of stuff from a certain period, but another period or another community group may not have had as much of attention. So it's like, how can we better represent the Indigenous community or the Black community in our collection? That doesn't mean we're getting rid of other pieces to make... to replace with,
sure,
if that makes sense. But it's just, okay, if we have a bunch of spoons that don't have anything to do with Fredericksburg, I can move those along to make room for stuff from the 250 events for this year.
Well, and Kylie, I am sure, Kylie Thompson here from the Fredericksburg Area Museum, the curator of collections, I'm sure that there are things that the people will sometimes say, I got the greatest thing for you. And like you say, because it's a Fredericksburg, because that's what you're looking for, there are probably some things that you think, this is really cool, but we don't have a place for it. And we'll never have a place for it.
And those ones always break my heart. And I've said it before that if that ends up happening, I will do my best to help you find a place for it. Because the thing is, if you say no to some of the stuff, it's gone forever. And that just breaks my heart. Because anytime someone brings me something, I absolutely love it. Because you're sharing a piece of your history with us. And to see people light up to tell the story about their grandmother, their grandfather, that's important to me. So if I can, one, get rid of, say, the broken stuff in the collection to make room for that china set that has to do with one of the founders of Fredericksburg, or get rid of, like, this beam so then they could use that at the college to make room for a bunch of photos from the bicentennial, then it just makes sense to do it.
But
it's a very tedious process. Not a lot gets deaccessioned, but it's a big conversation.
As soon as you use that word, I thought that is a new word. I need to try to somehow work into vocabulary.
Yeah. And I'm glad we did, because and dived into it a little bit, because on the surface, you don't want to hear, oh, the museum's getting rid of stuff. That's not what this is.
No, right, yeah. No, it fits in. It helps you tell the story and make room for the other
and
things.
And tell as many stories as possible. And that's especially going into Fredericksburg 300 coming up. I mean, everyone is part of Fredericksburg's story at some point. You and I are. Yeah. And so, you know, how do we prepare for that?
Yeah. Well, wrap it up when we come back. We'll talk again about Witness to Revolution, 250 years of history. It's getting ready to start. And we'll also talk about getting involved financially with the Fredericksburg Area Museum and how your involvement with all of this makes the things we've been talking about with Kylie this morning happen. FAMVA.org will conclude on News Talk 1230 WF.
This is Town Talk. on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Miss a part of the show? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Fredericksburg Area Museum in this morning. Kylie Thompson, the curator of collections. FAMVA.org, the website to find out more. Social media has all kinds of stuff about what is going on. And the great thing, Kylie, is that the community can play a big part in the Fredericksburg Area Museum, and we really do need to.
Yes.
As far as just, you know, regular giving is a great way.
Oh, absolutely. And when you give to the museum, that is not only helping keep the lights on, it's helping keep our admission free. It's helping us do these big exhibits. It's paying for panels and cases and display stuff and programs and all these different opportunities, field trips and whatnot. So, like I said earlier, any little bit helps. We do have different sponsorship tiers. Like I said, that gives you different perks with being with the museum. And even just coming out to some of our programs, or just every once in a while, if you're bored on a Saturday morning, stop in. And maybe if you drop a couple bucks in the donation bin, it all helps us because we are a nonprofit. We're a small staff, and we want to do as much as we can for and with the community.
Well, and we talk about the Virginia 250 and all the things that you're going to be involved in. The Fredericksburg 300, and you're going to be playing a big role in. You do some great stuff.
Thanks. We really try, and that's what for Fredericksburg 300, I want to go big. So we're really going to need the community's help, because just jumping off of what we did for Living Legacies and how cool that was to bring the community in. Let's do that again with 300. Let's have these big conversations and get exhibits in storefronts and transform the museum and do things in Market Square. But everything costs money, and we need everyone's help. And when we get that help, the more we can deliver and make it a good experience for everyone.
And not too many places, Kylie, or like the Fredericksburg Area Museum, where you can just walk in and it's free all the time.
Yes.
And so that can only happen if financially people are involved.
Oh, yeah. And our admission's free right now because we have some incredibly generous donors who pay each month to make sure that admission is covered. And it is so nice to see, because we see a lot of returning families now, which, you know, even if you're seeing the same stuff, just come and talk to us. And we try to make sure, now that it is free, we're swapping out vignettes and smaller exhibits, so you always have something new and exciting
and
to come see.
And there's been, it looks the last time I was here, some cool sweatshirts and t-shirts and jackets that say Fredericksburg Area Museum on them.
Now, and so you'll be able to also order that online, and we'll probably be adding more as we open up more exhibits. So yeah, if You should be wearing those Fredericksburg Area Museum shirts around town.
Exactly. Again, famva.org, Witness to Revolution, 250 years of history, Fredericksburg's role in the revolution. That is opening on Friday, this Friday, and it's really a nice kickoff to the Virginia 250 around here.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Come on out. You'll be with a lot of other people interested in history, and it'll just be a fun time, and you'll get to see that space completely transformed.
And this will be up, and this is up on the third floor.
On the third floor.
Where council chambers were at one time, and where the Lafayette exhibit was when it was here.
So one revolution story to another, but it'll look completely different.
So, and it's going to be a busy week for all of you as you get ready for this. 6 to 8 is the opening on Friday at the museum, which will be exciting. But just to see everything, and just as you have described everything, a lot of work goes into this. But this is really a great launching pad to stand, you know, go and visit this exhibit, see what interests you, and then you can go around Fredericksburg for the next year and learn a lot more.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, come check out. Just test your Revolutionary War knowledge and, you know, get inspired to talk to your friends and family about the bicentennial and the things that are happening today. And again, we'll talk about the Civil War in 1932 during George Washington's birthday, when everyone got really patriotic. So
yeah, that's a great thing about this exhibit, that it's not just, like as you've described, it's not just colonial America. You venture out and describe, you know, how things of even today tie in.
Oh, the American experiment is ongoing, And we talk about that. And yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully everyone can leave learning something.
Yeah. And again, and then on April 11th, the tombstone, yes, at the
Masonic
Cemetery.
Yep. And that'll be at 10 a.m. So come check that out and then get a tour of the lodge as well. You know, not many people get the chance to go in there.
No, that's...
And it's very, very cool inside.
Exactly. Well, Kylie, thanks for all your work and all this and taking time out this morning because you are a busy person with all of this. FamVA.org, again, witness to revolution, 250 years of history, Fredericksburg's role in the revolution, and it starts on Friday. Thanks.
On Friday.
We'll see you soon,
yeah,
Kylie. Thanks. Thank you. Kylie Thompson, Fredericksburg Area Museum. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.